Shalom Aleichem, Chaver, it's Binyamin Hammer at National Council Young Israel, and we are honored to have Rebbe for conference call number 52. Thank you, Rebbe.
A pleasure. Question one. A congregant just graduated medical school and will be starting residency soon. Can we provide guidelines for what he can and can't do on Shabbos, and how can he be advised? Number one, every medical school student should be advised to find a Shomer Shabbos residency. Even if the Shomer Shabbos residency is not as prestigious as the other one, even if it's not as excellent as the other one, firstly, it's not clear that a more excellent training program would, in each and every case, lead to better results, a better doctor. And even if it would, it may not be Docha Shabbos. Pikuach Nevesh is Docha Shabbos. But not everyone is required to become a doctor or the best possible doctor in the world. If it's impossible to get a Shomer Shabbos residency, and that can happen sometimes, based on the field you're in, based on what, how high you scored, how you match, as they call it today, nonetheless, he must be told that the Torah applies to him too. A violation of Shabbos applies to doctors as well as applies to anybody else, except that Pikuach Nefesh is Docha Shabbos. To save a life, you can do it even on Shabbos. In Igros Moshe and many others, we are taught that even the Pikuach Nefesh of an Eino Yehudi is also Docha Shabbos, even though it's against the Mishnah, against the Gemara. So Rav Moshe explains that that's the probable intent of the Chasam Sofer and the Divrei Chaim, that it could lead to Pikuach Nefesh of Yisrael if it will become known that the Jewish doctors only treat Jewish patients on Shabbos. And if any Yehudi, they will allow him to die, this could cause Pikuach Nefesh to the doctor himself and to the Jewish community at large. Having said that, some poskim say that when the individual is saving an Ein Yehudi on Shabbos and doing a Malachim and a Torah, the Heter really is Pikuach Nefesh of Yisrael, of his own and of the communities, and it's important, according to these authorities, that that's what the physician has in mind. It seems to me that if that's the case, when the physician starts his day, let's say Shabbos morning, whenever he comes in, whenever he goes in, he has to have in mind this intention, and once that's in his head at the beginning, it should suffice for the entire period of time, based on the Gemara of Kola Osa Das Rishonah Osa. If that's what you think from the beginning, it'll work through the day, even though during the day you're not thinking about that consideration at all, thinking about the patient. Not everyone agrees, but I think it's correct. You find it in the Chassidus and elsewhere. Even with respect to Yisrael, the Ramah seems to say that Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos is Dechuya, not Hutra, which means we can only do it when we have no alternative. And therefore, we should try to avoid it, according to Rav Moshe. We should try to be not on call on Shabbos. And if we're on call, we should try to limit the prohibitions, at least the Oraisa prohibitions. Therefore, it seems to me that an individual who knows the situation will exist should, if possible, try to live near the hospital so you can walk to the hospital. Not every hospital has living accommodations within walking distance that are suitable for a person, certainly not for a family. So you have to get there by car. You have to hire a non-Jewish driver. The non-Jewish driver should take the individual to the hospital in such a circumstance. If there's no alternative, as I said, you can't live nearby, it's permissible to call a guy. Better to have it arranged in advance and to pay him in advance. There are all kinds of ways these days. There's Uber and all kinds of other ways to arrange these things. To go back home is not so simple, but I believe there's room to be makel even going back to a non-Jew. The source of the Shemir Shabbos, Kilchasa, Perek Mem, Ha'ora, Ayin Beis, quotes of Shlomo Zalman, who says, and I quote, Yesh lehokel ad kama she'efshar leha'oskin ba'atolos nefashos. We should try to be as lenient as we can for those who are saving lives. True, he said it in Eretz Yisrael. In my opinion, it applies to Chutz La'aretz as well. There are Jewish lives, almost inevitably somewhere or other, as well as the consideration we mentioned earlier, that even any Yehudi is Docha Shabbos, called to Ramosh, even a Doraisis, and we here we're talking about the Rabbonans. The second biggest problem always was not riding, but writing. That problem is almost completely solved by President Obama, who ordered paperless medical records, writing the pen and papers in Issa D'Oraisa. What's going on today, when there's writing and all kinds of devices, iPads and phones and you name it, it's all in a digital universe. That is not Ksiva D'Oraisa. The only Ksiva D'Oraisa which exists is if the doctor is required to press the print button so that his report that's on his phone now or on his iPad will be printed in the hospital as a result of the button that he presses. Even though he's here and the printing is there, it's simple shot is it's an Issa D'Oraisa. And therefore, if it has to be done, either find a non-Jew nearby to press the print button, or if that's impossible, it must be done with a shinui, with the back of your knuckle, something of that type, to knock it down to a derabbanan. Seems that there's a third possible deraisa of putting on an incandescent bulb. Most lights today are not. They're cold light, which is presumably a derabbanan. The best way to do it, either way, is to have a non-Jew put on the light. If it's impossible, do it with a shinui. We can go forever and discuss every last detail, but it seems to me the most important thing is, as the question read, providing guidelines. The most important thing is that the doctor maintain a close connection to the Rav, who's paskening his shaylos, because the more shaylos will undoubtedly come. And keeping the connection between the Rav and the doctor is the most important thing. Question two. In our community, there's a well-used crosswalk on the way to shul. This pedestrian crossing does not have a traffic light. Instead, once a pedestrian enters the area of the crosswalk, drivers are supposed to stop. The question is being raised if there's a problem of amiru la'akum when standing in the crosswalk on Shabbos and indicating to drivers that we would like them to stop and then waving to thank them afterwards. But now, leave our Jewish drivers for the moment. Is purposely standing in the crosswalk on Shabbos permitted? This is a case of malacha through an akka, maybe psik resha. Very, very good question. Ideally, if possible, this should be avoided. The way it could be avoided is by waiting until there are no cars. It's called a well-used crosswalk. It doesn't say if it's how well-used the traffic is on the street. So obviously any car passing by is used to stopping in that area. You don't have to worry about a car, you know, coming 80 miles an hour down the road, you know, unless it's a drunk driver. Whoever drives there normally knows that any moment you'd be required to stop, so they can't be going that fast. So if you look as far as you can see, I'm not sure if it's one or two directions in this case, and there's no cars coming, that's the best time to use a crosswalk, so no one has to stop for you. If that's impossible, the cars just keep coming, it'd be better to wait for another pedestrian. But if that's impossible, there are many cars and no pedestrians, then and there's no alternative, there's possibly room to be lenient to enter the area of the crosswalk. I don't believe there's any Issa D'Oraisa which is violated when somebody is braking a car. You put on the gas, you step on the gas, you're starting more fires. It's a combustion engine, let's remember. So you're making more fires. That's an Issa of Havara de Oraisa. When you are putting on the brake, I do not see an Issa de Oraisa. The fires will presumably stop when you take your foot off the gas. That may be considered to be kibui, which is probably a melacha shein tzricha legufa. It's not a daraisa. It's not even clear that it's considered to be kibui. You take the foot off the gas, just stopping more fuel from coming in. It's a complicated question depending on the precise construction of the automobile. You press the brakes are just stopping the wheel. True, in many cases, a light goes on in the back of the car, as it should, and that's a case where it very likely would be an incandescent bulb, certainly in the older cars. But that's not the intention of the person who's stopping the car. That's a psik resha. Poskim say, amil anachri, but psik resha is permissible. In any event, obviously, once you pass the crosswalk, the car is going to step on the gas and keep going. That's not based on you. As far as you're concerned, he can stay in the crosswalk till Abdullah. That he wants to go travel further, it's his business. So there's no Amir Lanachri there either. I should also correct the expression Amir Lanachri. Amir means speaking. The person not speaking at all. However, there is a prohibition because by standing in the crosswalk, you are in effect commanding him to stop, as the law requires of him. We call that shlichos lenachri lechumra, that he's considered to be, you're basically telling the guy what to do. And telling the guy what to do could be a violation even in the absence of speaking. And that's why it's better to avoid if it's possible. Question three. Mr. Brewer says in the name of the Achronim that one should, who smells coffee that is ground and hot and enjoys the aroma should make a bracha. Asher nosen reach tov l'peiros. We do not see people making this bracha today when they smell the coffee and get real enjoyment out of it. Should one be making the bracha today? Is the bracha made only on freshly ground coffee? Why does the Mr. Brewer say when it's hot to enjoy the aroma of fresh ground coffee before you add the water? Why shouldn't you make the bracha? That's a very good question. The Aruch HaShulchan says, against the Mishnah Berurah, that you do not make a bracha. Your main intention is to eat or drink. Shaar HaTzion himself quotes his Svara in Sifkotan Mem Zayin, name of the Vilna Gaon, and ruled that Safek Brachos Lahakel. That's a case where the coffee is smelled. If you hold it in your hand, the Mishnah Berurah says maybe you should say a bracha. However, Pitzkei Tshuvos in Sifkot Zayin, he suggested even in that case, we should say Safek Brachos Lahakel. And therefore, the best thing is, as the Rambam writes here in Siman Reish Tezayin, Sif Yudalit, not, as they say in America, don't smell the coffee. You smell the coffee? It's a metaphor. Don't smell the coffee, because if you do smell the coffee, you're going to run into a suffix brachos situation. Obviously, you can't stop from smelling, but don't intentionally smell, and then it'll be less of a question. Question four. Should a person make a bracha when he sees a large body of water if he is amazed by the vastness of the water, like the Verrazano Bridge? The Verrazano Bridge is from Brooklyn to Staten Island, and it crosses over an inlet of the Atlantic Ocean. As big as it is, as if you're looking south, you'll see a much greater expanse of water. And it is quoted in Shulchan Aruch that someone who sees the Yamagodol, the Ukyonus, would make a bracha of Osam Masa Bereshis. The custom, as is the questioner accurately states, is not to make a bracha. Why not? Well, the Piskei Tshuvos quotes Rav Shlomo Zalman, Halicha Shlomo, Perek Chav Gimel, Os Chav Ches, that someone who lives near the ocean, and by strict halacha, if 30 days passed, he's required to make a new bracha. Nonetheless, he need not. Why not? He's not in his spoil. He's not amazed. He sees it all the time. And Rav Shlomo Zalman extends it to someone who hasn't seen it for 30 days. Why not? He didn't bother to look. He could have seen it at any, he could have gone. It's not such a long trip to get from his house to see the Atlantic Ocean. He's not in his spoil from it. He's used to it. He grew up with it. He actually talks about this in the context of Kriya on the Mokam HaMikdash, the coastal Maravi, for Yerushalmis. He says, even if they by chance don't see the coast in 30 days, we could perhaps be lenient not to do Kriya because they're not in the spoil. They're used to it. That's the comparison which is brought over here. The issue is that the minhag is not to say the bracha of Osama Sebrachis, even for those who live in Chicago, nowhere near the Yam HaGadol, on either side. That, of course, requires an explanation. Generally, we are mimayit with these brachas. Perhaps there's some, you know, disputes which raise the question of Sefik brachas. But I'm just saying that the minhag is not to make this bracha. Those of us who live in New York have the additional svar of Shlomo Zalman. That's just a minhag. Maybe some kind of a suffix which they suffix brachos l'halacha. Question 5. Someone noticed that their basement window was covered inside by a built-in bookshelf. They had learned that it is problematic. The window was intact, not visible from the basement itself, only from the outside. Do we follow Rav Yehuda Chosid about this? Well, do you follow Rav Yehuda Chosid about anything? He gave it savor. There are two volumes of a beautiful sefer by Rabbi Lerner, originally from Chicago, not from Yerushalayim. It's called Shmiras HaGuf HaNefesh. In his first volume, in the introduction, it's about 10 pages about this. Quoted in Noda Behuda Sinyana, Eben Ezra, Ayin Tess says, I can't answer this question. He asked a similar question. Ein Darki LeHoshiv Ein Shorish B'Shasu Poskim. He didn't want to answer the question. He knows Shas and Poskim, not Rav Yehuda Chosid. Some say that he only gave a tzavor for his descendants. The Chasam Sofer seems to say that way. Some say that not even apply to his descendants. The Marsha is quoted as saying that he's from the direct descendant of Rav Yehuda Chosid, and the names that were given to him and his father were stated in the tzavor not to be given. They were given anyway. In any event, the Rechaim disagrees with the Noda Behuda. The Chasam Sofer and Rav Moshe, Ikris Moshe, Ebenezer, Chelik Aleph, Simon Dalet, quote a Gemara in Pesachim Daf Kuf Yud. Ma de lo kapid lo kabdina ba'adei. One who doesn't care, so the whatever dangerous elements won't care about him. A dispute with the Chazanish said. One said, the Chazanish said, if it doesn't bother you, I think the context there is a child and a parent-in-law sharing the same name. Doesn't bother you. Doesn't bother you. Forget it. The Gemara's context is zugos. Pairs is supposed to be dangerous. Chaim Konevsky is quoted L'chumra. He's very machman chumas ibn yachosid. He says the Chazanish was not properly quoted. The Gemara does say there in Pesachim Kuf Yud, Miu lemechash miboy. But some either don't have the girsa, and some don't pass in that way. That's an introduction in general to the Savar of Yehuda Chosid. There are those who say that in this particular case, we can be maker for the following reasons. Some say it does not apply in the basement. Talking about the basement over here. Some said it does not apply when there's a wall opposite the hole. Apparently, because there's going to be a slight little hole between the window and the bookcase. And the poskim say, if you make a hole in the wall that's used to stuff it up, it would be okay. And some say whatever kpeder of Yehuda Chassid had is only for those who actually do the act of stuffing themselves, as opposed to this person who moved into the house and the wall was already there, especially after a long time. So you have a svek of the tibimeko. Once again, that's plenty of room to be lenient, but those who are makpid, kapir lef, if you don't want to live with it, you have to fix it. Make some small hole somewhere. Question 6. Someone lives in an apartment building with automatic front doors. When the doorman sees a resident coming to the door on Shabbos, he walks into the line of the beam so that the door opens. What's within? Mutter. The doorman could open it if he'd like from the inside. It has to be that way because otherwise it'd be a fire hazard and it's a sakonas nefashos. It's too hard for him to go. It's easier than opening with some kind of a key or some kind of emergency or simply pushing it with his hand. The easier way is to go into the way of the beam, the photoelectric cell, presumably. That's, if you go there, it opens the door. That's his business. Like some doorman will buzz you in from their seat. It's his business. He's too lazy to get up and use the front door handle. That's okay. He's doing it for himself. B, he then follows the resident to the elevator, pushes their floor button without being asked. That's not allowed. That is amira l'nachri, as I said before. Not amira in the literal sense of speaking, but it's a shlucha l'chumra. He's obviously doing it for you without being asked. He knows you live on what floor you live on. He knows that there's other people who do it. Obviously, he's doing it for you. Now, it's true, according to the majority of the posting, that completing an electric circuit is not a d'oraisa. The motor would not itself be a d'oraisa. And any bulbs that may go on, even if it's electric and a shalom of d'oraisa, it's only a psik ratio. And a psik ratio, I'm Yehuda Nachri, we paskin, is permissible, as we mentioned a little earlier. Nonetheless, the concept of the shvus, b'moko mitzvah is not so simple. It's not a slam dunk. It's what we call a shasat chaketer. If there's no alternative, we allow it. Well, the reason for that, I believe, is that shvus to shvus, the moko mitzvah, is based on a combination of factors. The moko mitzvah takes away the issue of amira, of speaking. You're not speaking anyway. And what's called the shlichus l'nachri l'chumra, the Gemara Bava Mesiyah Daf Tzadi, is an unresolved question. So we have to be strict if it's ikra midaraisa, if the work itself is midaraisa. But if it's only midarabanan, we call it a shvus to shvus. Well, what you're telling us to do is even if you did it, would be midarabanan. We can then suggest it's an unresolved question by the Mesiyah Daf Tzadi, but lo sach to show medisho, whether it exists such an issue or not of shluko l'chumra. And for the ikra midarabanan, have a right to be lenient. So the shvus of Malka Mitzvah is based on Sfeka Derabana Lekula. But Sfeka Derabana Lekula is not something that we do routinely. We do it when we have no choice but to do it. So therefore, it seems to me that this is not something which should be done routinely. He's considered to be a shliach, even if you never said a word to him. A Shatat Chag is different. Yeah, but don't buy an apartment on the 20th floor and then say, oh, now for the Shatat Chak. You should have no right to buy that apartment in the first place. Buy on a lower floor. Ah, the view is not so good. You want to be Shalom Shabbos. That's what should be done. Buy on a low floor. What happens? He bought on the low floor and suddenly something got sick. He can't even go up two flights of stairs. That's a very different story. That's a chola. What if they were on the third floor and now they have a baby? So people have been carrying their babies upstairs since time immemorial, but there could be some kind of unique case, an out of the ordinary case, where the baby cannot be carried up the stairs, and can't leave the baby downstairs, maybe a shatat chak, a mokum choli, a cotton could be counted as a chola. Perhaps there'd be a little bit more reason to be lenient. Question 7. What's the difference between fruits and chocolate? What about candy, liquid jelly beans? What about ices or ice cream? Is it treated like jello at the end of the meal we're discussing? And what about watermelon? And what about an appetizer, a fruit cup, or otherwise? A lot of questions over here. Generally speaking, the criterion is it's something purely, what's called kinuach, the Lashon Mishnah Berurah, kuf ayin zayin siv kof dalet, rak lekinuach velo laaspia, only for a sweet taste and doesn't fill you up at all. It seems to me that what fits that bill clearly is fruit, as well as, we said last time, jello. Always room for jello, it doesn't fill you up. Everything else, to me at least, is a chance it's filling, even including chocolate, even including ice cream. I'm not sure about candy. Different kinds of candy. Some are more filling than others. When it comes to ice cream and ices, some posts can say that it is treated as a mashke, because at room temperature it would melt. And that's why there's no bracha. Some say it's filling. So again, a watermelon, you would make a bracha. But the other thing's not. What about an appetizer, food cup? It's a big machlekes. If you look in the Dirshu, in Kuf Ayin Dalet, footnote 43, you'll see a big machlekes. You can throw the achronim one way, some the other way. What's the question? The question is, a food cup at the beginning of the meal, does it whet the appetite or not? It's mostly a question of fact. But you know, many facts are indeterminable. Does it wet? How much is it wet? You gotta take a poll. How do you know exactly? So I say Safik Brachas Lahakel in that case as well. Next page. Question 8. My daughter is in Mitzvah coming home from a seminary after a terrific year. She has respectfully asked me what to do when what she learned in seminary is different from what her father Paskins based in his Rebbeim. For example, she was told Hilchos Brachas and Shabbos and is different from what she is accustomed to at home. Her Rebbeim, very chashuv, v'chavrei svarim, who could tell the gedolim in regard to Pesach. So she wants to know what to do. Would there be any difference regarding a boy with different Pesach from a Rebbe or Shishiva? Because what guides it to what to do in such a situation? Should a child be encouraged to follow their Rebbe in Yeshiva or follow their parents' Pesach? As we just saw, the laws of brachos are very complicated. It seems to me that parents should not insist that the child who has now studied Torah intensively has received the psak, which is different than what he or she sees at home. Parents should not insist that the child continue the customs of the parents. There's no real mesora in Hilchos Brachos about these complicated questions. I think that should be the general attitude. Hilchos Shabbos is a little bit different because often you'll find what we call chumras in Eretz Yisrael. Comes to brachos, there's no chumras. It's either shak or adam, there's no chumras. But Shabbos, for one position, is called safe position, not to do it. There is an atiyah of chumras sometimes in Eretz Yisrael, and sometimes it causes tension in the house. We've been doing this for 30 years. All of a sudden, this whippersnapper walks in from the land, Holy Land. You can't do this. What should the parents be advised? The parents should be advised as follows. Go to Yorov and find out this stricture that your child has imported from Eretz Yisrael, does it make sense? Or is it way off? If the Rav says, look, it makes sense, it's Chumrah, as often he will say, the best strategy that the father himself and the mother herself should adopt the Chumrah. I remember they said about Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, that his son, Rav Yitzchak, came back with Chumras and Kashrus. Rabbi was the biggest machmir on everything, but you know, his son had more chumras. So instead of chastising his son and saying, you know, what are you so strict for? What I do is good enough. On the contrary, the household adopted his son's chumras. That's an enlightened Godel B'Yisrael. So people such as myself, who are Ketanim, and other Rabbonim, and other Balabatim, should be told, you know what? If your daughter comes back with a chumrah, your son, and the rabbi, your own rabbi says the chumrah makes sense, you know what? If you can live without chumrah, you should try it. This would be validating your children's year in Israel. You justify the tuition that you paid. You learn something new. However, the question will be, what will happen in a situation where it does not affect the whole household? Many of these chumras have to do with Hilchos Bishul in the kitchen, affects the whole household. I would recommend that if your rabbi says that, you know, your kula is okay, but the chumra also is okay, the best thing to do would be to adopt that chumra. If you can't, you can't. And the child will have to live with your standard. Many Hilchos Shabbos questions are personal. Nothing to do with the household. And the child asks, so go back to your rabbi. Does it make sense, this chumra? If it does, let her do it. Him or do what she wants. You have to encourage to follow the Rebbe and the yeshiva. You know, but if that's what they want to do, it certainly should be allowed. Question 9. Wearing or not wearing a tchelis. A colleague said that those who don't wear it, it's just because those who discovered it were modern, and that one should wear it even if he isn't convinced of the fake of the rice of the chumra. There are many, many issues concerning tchelis. We'll talk briefly. My Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik told the whole shir, that even if they should happen to rediscover the tchelis somewhere, we cannot pick up the practice because a mesorah once is broken, it's broken. He quoted this from his great-grandfather, the Beis Halevi, in the context of an esrog. If we had forgotten what Priya Tzadar would be, we could no longer go back to archaeology and see what they used in Beis HaMikdash, and then reenact that practice. No, the Torah once is gone, is lost and gone forever. It's not the same as it was a question of following Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel of Tzitzis, and it was an archaeological find. Well, Baba Vashi has wanted to look and see what it said, Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel. That's different. That's not a species. It's a question of how many strings, etc. That's a different story. That's Aleph. Now, it's true that the Beis Halevi is quoted differently in the Radzina Sefer, but that was not a quote directly. So the Radzina said, I heard from somebody, heard from the Beis Halevi, a different version. But the more authentic version that I heard from my Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, the great-grandson and namesake of the Beis Halevi, as well as the tradition of the Briska family in Yerushalayim, is the same. Not like what the Radzina said. The Radzina, unfortunately, probably played a game of telephone. He heard from someone, heard from the Beis Halevi, got lost in translation. That's number one. Now, they say it could be wrong. Who said he's right? At the same time, there's no real, real proof that this particular species is the tchelis of old. The proof is a negative proof. There's nothing else which is close to the tchelis of old besides this particular species. Okay. However, there are many species which have become extinct in the last 1,500 years. We don't know. There could be millions of species extinct in the last 1,500 years. And there is a phrase in Chazal that tchelis was nignaz till Mashiach comes. Maybe that's what it means. It's extinct. Then there are those who disagree, even among the quote-unquote moderns, the Professor Felix, who had a somewhat different version of exactly what it should be, which is quoted by these Svarim. Then there's an argument about what's the color. It recently reared its head, where a new author recently wrote that proof from many places, it's not light blue, it's not dark blue, it's not green blue, it's purple. And it was a response back and forth. I have no idea of the four which of them is right. And although some say it doesn't matter, I think it does matter. The color has to be the right color. So it's just you have a 1 in 4 chance of getting the right color. You have a 1 in 3 chance of coloring the right amount of chutim of the 8. Is it 1, 2, or 4? Well, this might be the Yehuva. But Yashiv has in his COVID service that what do you have to lose? You have what to lose. Because if it's not really Tcheles, you've not fulfilled the mitzvah that the string should be the same color as the garment. It's nothing to do with modern discoverers. It's a matter of many of the people involved in Tcheles are very far from modern. For me, it's too difficult to create a new Mesorah. I think Rabbi Usher Weiss has a similar tshuva in his farm. There are admittedly Gedolei Torah Mamish who are wearing Tcheles. No need to mention their names. It's well known. But you know, I'm not wearing it. And it seems to me, not only because I heard it from the Rebbe, which is the main reason I'm not wearing it, but the other reasons are also important to me. Question 10. The ink used to fill a ksuba written many years ago is faded. It is still legible and more than just Rishum Anika, but the couple wants to know if they can trace over the lines in any old way, or does it have to be done in front of Aiden? How in general is this done? Is a new ksuba written up? I haven't seen someone who allows you to touch it up, not by yourself, and not even in the presence of Aiden. If someone does see it, please let me know. We'll mention it in the next session. What I did see in a number of svarim is that you need a new ksuba fundamentally. Sefer Mishpat HaKsuba, he says, you either require a bezdin to make a kiyum on the Edim and write a new document from the original time, Chosh Mishpat Simen Mem Aleph Sif Aleph, or in the alternative, you write a new ksuba. You can add something to make it better. You write a new ksuba. The Nachos Shiva Simen Tezayin has this case. You want to add, you love your wife so much for the 10th anniversary, you say, I want to add to your ksuba. Of course, you add to the ksuba, it's only from the later date. And she will, in theory, lose the lien on the property for the past 10 years. But, you know, in most cases, it doesn't really matter. Again, it may be possible to simply treat the paper in a certain way that it will not fade anymore. You have to ask a techie how that's done. But to write over it and trace over it, even in the presence of the Aiden, the same Aiden, is still questionable. I don't think I've seen it in Svar. 11. A congregant working for U.S. History Recording Company is editing a document that quotes a U.S. official who says, thank God, the hostages have been freed. Of course, this quote does not use the hyphen, and ultimately the document will be published and widely distributed by the U.S. government, printing Hashem's name. With no control over the ultimate disposal of the books, is there a shameless issue? Or why is there no shameless issue? Whoever's worried about this particular book has a problem of a different nature. If whenever the word God is printed by the American government or a company working for the government, it's shameless. You have a problem with every penny and every dollar bill. In God we trust. There was some Briscoe Lachmir who wouldn't take any money into the bathroom for that reason. That's not the Minhag Yisrael. We assume there's no shameless issue with respect to such situations. The person who is printing it did not have in mind to be Mekadosh Hashem as it should be Mekudosh in a normal way. And there are Machmir, but the Minhag Yisrael is that there's no Kedusha if it was printed just as a history without an attempt to sanctify God's name in print. Question 12. Do you need to tovel a non-disposable aluminum cupcake pan if the cupcakes never touch the pan itself, since they are always in their own paper? The Sefer Tefillas Kelim in Perek Aleph, end of Sifkot and Zion, quotes from Shlomo Zalman, who says if there is a bag or some tin, some plastic bag or some significant covering, it would be a hefsek, and there's no need for Tefillah, but he does say, for reasons I don't understand, that paper, such as what interposed between the cupcakes And the pan, it's just a little paper. I got the impression from Shlomo Zalman that it may not be sufficient to relieve you from the obligation of tefillah, even though he quotes himself with an Indian of tashmish to tashmish by a covering of a bima. He says, well, nido didan shiny. I don't know why shiny, but if a person would like to do tefillah on it, I would say do it without a bracha, as opposed to what it says in the tefillah of Kalim. If it's up to me, I would say there's no bracha, but Shlomo Zalman says differently, although he doesn't explain why it's not the same as tashmish. It's tashmish. Maybe he would agree in the case of a cupcake cup. It's not just a plain piece of paper. It's actually a cup made of paper. That's enough of a hefsek. Not clear to me. 13. If a woman is having difficulties doing bedikas due to a wound, may she place a lubricant on the bedika cloth? Ideally, if it's a problem, she should just wet the cloth with a little bit of water. If that's not enough, she should use a very clear lubricant. Very clear, because otherwise it could cover up a bit of dam. What is the minimum number of bedikas we could allow? She did on one and on seven. She's afraid to do a bedika because she's concerned the wound will bleed. May she do a bedika on day eight, go to the mikvah that night, or must she restart the count? Shulchan Aruch says about this case, ein lahakil. You do one and eight, ein lahakil. You should not be lenient. There are those who say in a shas of chak, a wound, Chashulchan says you don't need the second bedikah at all. Every case is different, whether it qualifies to be that shas hadchak or not. In any event, I think women of this type should always be advised, if you're going to skip bedikahs, which you may in shas hadchak, don't skip from 1 to 7. A, you may forget and wake up after dark. It's happened so many times. B, a situation such as this. Everything was good. One, two, three, six days were good, and then the seventh day, you see, whoops, you start to stain. You'd rather postpone it until the eighth day. So if you did a check in one of the previous 5 days, two, three, four, five, or six, then you can skip a day or as many days as needed, as long as there aren't more than 5 days between the days that you're checking, it's going to work. So the two reasons why anyone is relying on the leniency, which should not be relied upon uniformly, contrary to what some teachers teach. The Mishnah says explicitly you should check every single day. In my opinion, once a day will suffice. Others require two. Shulchan Aruch says two. It's a question why, or Pekki Vega. In any event, so you tell the person that they should do one, then pick one other day among the next five, and then do seven, and then she can go to the mikvah that night. Eight. A couple had a break into their apartment while they were away, a kosher that the babysitter's teenage son may have used his mother's key to break in. The mother and son are Jewish. The police are investigating. What can the couple say or not say to the police about their suspicions? I believe they must tell the police about their suspicions. They're not saying the fellow is certainly a thief. Obviously, someone got in, and the only one they can think of was the key is the babysitter, and babysitter's son has access to his mother's stuff. And the police will check it out. What will happen if they find out he did steal? Maybe they'll recognize him from some movie camera for security, which exists these days, or some other way. Look, it's better he should be caught now as a youngster and do tshuva rather than wait longer. He can be prosecuted as an adult. Much better that a youngster, it doesn't say how old the teenager is, but certainly if he's under the age of real adulthood, he'd be better off getting caught than learning his lesson now before it can be much worse at a later stage. A stepfather is helping his wife pay for her children's yeshiva tuition. Can his payments be considered ma'aseh money? The answer is yes, since he has no technical responsibility for his stepchildren. Nonetheless, since they are part of the household that he's part of, it would be better if he could give ma'aseh over and above this tuition money. 16. A young couple is getting married and has asked their rav for advice about choosing Edim for the Kiddush and the Ksuba. How should the rav instruct them about choosing Edim Ksherim? What can the rav ask the couple or the Edim themselves if they're selected to ensure that reliable Edim have been chosen? First of all, Kiddush is a much higher threshold than Ksuba, because Edim Kiddush is ma'akev, and Ksuba is not ma'akev for a variety of reasons. Number one. Number two is the chatchila b'diavad. The chatchila, you should make sure the medaktrim b'mitzvah to keep everything. What you ask about specifically? Well, the Gemara is the Mababatra. Ruban v'gezel amyutim barayas. So gezel includes gezel nachri. Seems to me gezel nachri would parcel someone ladus, who's stealing from an Eid Yehudi. Unless, in some places, in some cases, you can invoke the Gemara, Baba Metzia, that mashmulu l'inshi demuta. People think this is really okay, whatever the reason, whether because it's not a Yisrael or because it's not really Geneva, 10 different rationalizations. But if people in the world think that way, even though it's a prohibition, it would not passel him li'edus. And especially if some people say it actually is mutter. In some of these cases, it's a machlokes. So too with Arayas. According to the Rambam, those sikibul legalos ever includes physical contact, not only bia. It should be something which leads up to bia. It's a question of what that actually means in detail. But there may be a case where the quantum drama would be possible the edus. Unless you say, once again, people think it's okay, and some actually say it is okay. Well, not everything's okay. Shaking hands, we've spoken in the past, quantum samat yahar by Yava, quantum, I believe, of Chaim Berlin, it's mutter to avoid the embarrassment of the other party. Again, this is all a chatchila to try as much as possible to avoid any shaylus. Choosing the Aden, get some of those medactic kala kachamura on Gezel, on Arayas, of course on Shabbos and Kashrus, and hope that it's kosher. Rav David Lifshitz, the Chron of Elk, will tell every Aden under the Chuppah, should be Mahara B'tshuva. Apparently, European custom, but I haven't seen it these days. Okay. Shaking hands. Some say it's Yerag Bayavar, some say it's Het Gamma. So I would be Mekel as far as that's concerned, because there are many Mekelim, and someone who does it is assuming that it's permissible. 17. I was reading the Ksuma of the Rechupa and noticed a mistake. The Chosin's name was transposed with the father's name. Avram Yitzchak ben Yaakov Yosef was written as Avram Yitzchak ben Yaakov Yitzchak. How should I have proceeded? Does it need to be redone, or would a cross out suffice? Should it be redone under the chuppah? Does it have to be redone prior to the yichidrum or before the end of the wedding? Should I have read it the right way for the sake of the ceremony and showed it to Mesadik Kiddushin after? The Mesadik Kiddushin called up the Eidim that signed it. He showed him that he wrote the name and he read and had me read it. After the chuppah, he redid the ksuba prior to the yichidrum. Is that the best approach? Now, Eilu Veilu, you can't really erase. I would say that the best thing to do is to write a new ksuba. Not under the chuppah would be a big tircha de sibur, and I don't even think it's required before the yichud. It's also a tircha of the chasm kala. And if you keep them out of the yichud for 10 minutes, Emma gets home 10 minutes later. That's what it really means. Read it right and fix it after the yichud. What does it sound like? Have yichud? Some say there's no use of yichud at all without a ksuba. Some say no ksuba works the first day, because it's dated that day. You never know when the day it was done. So you wouldn't collect from the Shabbat until, so it's a nighttime wedding, until the next Shkia. And if it's an early wedding, until the Shkia following. So then you just write the Nuxuba before that. So you should write the Nuxuba immediately. But I believe there's room to be lenient to have the Yichud while the ksuba is being written. Many poskim say you rely on what they call the king of suda, the king of chalipin, at least for the first day. Some say the change in the father's name doesn't even pass. Even in the get, there's some equivalent. So for that reason, I would say we could be lenient. 18. And finally, there are people in my community who want to buy Israeli produce to support Israel and have educated themselves on how to take truma and ma'aser. The question has come up, is it permitted to compost the tithe which must be disposed of? I'm not an expert in what that means, but if I understand correctly, there's a measure of hana, of benefit that's being realized from this item. Generally speaking, in the olden days, trumas and maasros had to be burned. And nowadays, we don't make fires, so we just wrap it up and put it in respectfully into a recycle, into a garbage. If there's going to be any hanah, the hanah should be had by a kohen. They do that in certain places in Eretz Yisrael. They give it to the animals in the zoo and they mock the animals to a kohen, pemto shel kohen. But since if a person's not going to do that, then he should not be using the compost system to take care of the miser. Again, assuming there is a hana, it's called hana shokilu. It's like burning it. I find it's incorrect. It's sort of burned up. It sort of dissolves and gives some benefit to the ground to which it's found. Again, if that's what it means, it's a problem unless the person happens to be a kohen, which is itself questionable today, who is a kohen. So I would say the best way to do the Trumas HaMaisers is, in fact, to wrap it up in the plastic and to dispose of it that way respectfully. Thank you very much.
Rebbe, thank you very much. And we want to wish everyone a good summer. And Bezrat Hashem will continue further down the line. Thanks again.
Take care. Be well. Bye.
Take care.